Those of you who were with us at our previous talk around the beginning of the new year will remember that we spoke about the timely subject of Theophany, the baptism of the Lord. Since we had gathered for Vespers that evening, we were obliged to address that subject. Now, more generally, we find ourselves after the feasts and in this new year. As you know, many things took place during these days surrounding the feasts, and especially around the turning of the year. And even now, as you see, we are still in what we might call their wake. People are still talking, saying, many years may it be blessed, and a thousand other things. People offer one another good wishes. Of course, I cannot say why one person offers these wishes to another. We want to live here, and so we wish one another many years. If the purpose of my living many years is that I may correct myself, then by all means let it be so. But when all the talk is about my living many years, and I feel offended if no one sends me wishes for many years, while I simply go on doing the same things that I cannot understand, for that is precisely what happened for most people, nothing changed. Nothing, in the fullest sense of the word. Of course, a black dividing line was drawn between 1977 and 1978. That is true. Those who stayed awake to welcome the new year, whether in one another's arms, at the card table, around the dining table, or wherever else, did nothing more than turn off the lights at midnight. Darkness fell, and then, when they heard the radio announce 12:01, they turned the lights on again, embraced and kissed one another, raised their glasses and drank, or whatever else they did. Man is like a merchant entrusted with goods. To one the master gave 2 talents, to another 5 talents, and to another 1 talent. And he told them, trade with them. One day I shall return and ask you to give an account. That is how it is. If, then, you ask those engaged in business during these days, or look at certain shops, you will see a sign saying, closed, or closed for the annual balance sheet. But with what hope, with what thought and resolution, shall I receive the new ledger that the angel hands me on the night between 1977 and 1978, so that I may record good things in it, and so forth? Most people gave no thought to such things. For this reason, what can I say? Perhaps it would be better if we did not find ourselves in the new year at all. That too may not be far from a good wish. Of course, I do not wish for such a thing, because if the goodness and forbearance of God have permitted us to enter 1978, who am I to dare, in my unworthiness, to say that it was wrong for us to cross into it? No, I cannot say that, but what I can and must say as a reminder is what Paul says, the goodness and forbearance of God lead us to metanoia, to repentance. This must be said, it is no chance event, it is joyful, yet also fearful. It is what we call joyful sorrow, something whose 2 sides we cannot separate. It is joyful because God has added more days to our lives, but it is also fearful because we must consider how we shall conduct ourselves, how we shall live them, and how we shall use these days He has added in the new year. No one knows whether he will live to see the end of 1978. All the good wishes of the world, from all its billions of people, could be gathered together and bestowed upon one person, yet they would not add even a single second to his life. No one knows whether he will live through 1978. Many who were among us are now absent. During 1977 they departed and passed into another world, either dark or light according to what they had fashioned for themselves with their own hands. For hell or paradise is attained by man himself. According to the life he has lived here, so he will go there. The grave is honest. It receives and keeps within itself whatever each person entrusts to it, until the second coming, when the graves will open again, at the command and at the voice of the archangel. Then the resurrection will take place. If we handed ravens over to the graves, they will give back ravens, and if we handed over doves, the graves will give back doves. Whether we want it or not, whether we believe it or not, this will happen one day. And the prudent person is called to act with this in mind. Of course, some people want many years, and they want those years to be happy and so forth. Who does not want that? But what do you mean by happiness? When you speak of happiness, what do you mean? Do you mean money, as though all your joys rested upon it? Give me money, and I know what I shall do. I shall build churches, provide dowries for orphans, and do everything. Does God need you to come and do all these things and therefore have to give the money to you? Why should He give it to you? Is that what God asks of you? If someone made money, can you call the year happy if he did nothing for his soul? I once read about a man who was 81 years old and had $81 million in the bank. It was as though from childhood onward he had amassed $1 million for every year of his life. But the dark-faced visitor, death, knocked at his door as well. What could he do then? He found himself in his final moments with his wife, for they had no children, together with his doctor and one friend. These were the last moments before his departure. And slowly these words were heard from the lips of that immensely wealthy man, "I am leaving poor, wretched, and pitiable." That was his final answer. There was another man who lived in a veritable palace and refused to listen whenever anyone spoke to him about Christ. During another visit, someone found him gravely ill. His only daughter said to him, "Father, I am going into town. What would you like me to bring you?" He replied, "Buy me a pistol so that I can kill myself." If a person were willing to reflect, he would see that even if he won the first prize in the lottery, even if he got every football prediction right, even if he achieved everything he desired, yet failed to attain Christ, to enter into communion with Christ and discover the purpose of his life, it would have been better for him never to have been born. And yet we pay no attention to these things. We speak of happy and prosperous years if there is no war, if prices do not rise. If nothing of that sort happens, if there is no illness in the family, then we call the year happy. But seriously, is that happiness? Happiness depends on Christ. It does not depend on material possessions. Therefore, unless a person takes care that the passing years become an occasion for his soul to change for the better, becoming purer, more upright, more faithful, and so forth, then those years are a misfortune, not a blessing. It makes no difference how much he wishes otherwise, or how much others wish it for him. Yet we have reached the point, as you yourselves know, where we no longer discern the condition of the soul. I am grieved to see that even in Christian homes, when guests come, the conversation is about anything and everything. They talk about the snow, foreign countries, the Alliance, the Communist Party, Makarios, Karamanlis, this person and that person. What are all these things? What place do such matters have in the home? What a lovely dress you have. What a fine suit. Where did you have it made? Oh, I had it made cheaply. And so on. My dear Anitza, is your little soul made of silk as well? Your dresses are silk, but is your soul also silk? A lady once heard a child say this, and she lifted the child up and kissed her for the answer she had given. Instead, we are raising ravens in our homes, vultures and eagles, people who are twisted and disordered, and so forth. Are the things I'm saying untrue? No, they are true. Yet people deny all this by the way they live and say, "May the year be happy." Then someone complains, "Can you imagine? He did not even wish us many years." Not even many years? Seriously? Why should God give you many years? What will you do with them? If you intend to use them for good, then may He give you not merely many years, but billions. For when we speak of many, we are really speaking almost in jest. For the human person is eternal. When you wish someone many years, you are almost mocking him. From the moment a human being is conceived in his mother's womb, that person is eternal, even if a doctor casts the child away or the mother kills it. Do whatever you will. That little soul, from the first moment of conception, remains for eternity. One day you will find that soul standing before you. Whatever you may do, why, then, do you wish me many years, since I am eternal? Now, eternity is double-faced, as the fashionable expression goes. It has two aspects. There is a dark eternity, and there is a radiant eternity. Which eternity we shall enter depends on you and on me. We are very small before these realities. Here we can play the brave fellow and say, it does not exist, or that is not true, and one thing after another. But when the one I mentioned earlier comes, the wax-nosed messenger of death, everything changes. That is precisely why we must be watchful and thank God for His forbearance. I take my own life as an example. God had every right from the first day, provided my parents had not thrown me into some rubbish bin, to bring my life to an end very early. He could have ended it when I was 10, 20, 30, 40, or 50 years old, but He did not. He left me time to repent, to return, and to struggle today so that I might finally attain salvation. This is the work of His goodness. He did well, glory to His name, to add days to my life so that I had time to pull myself out of the mire, to move forward, and to begin struggling, whereas before I used to boast of my sins, and others even took pleasure in them and wanted to hear about my filth and stench. I pray that He will do the same for the whole world. But my prayer is twofold. Whatever God does in His goodness, may we make good use of it. Let us not assume that we shall still be here tomorrow, because tomorrow does not belong to us, nor is God obliged to give it to us. If He does so out of love. That is His own affair. I can neither take offense at Him nor instruct Him. He acts according to His own will. Consequently, I must make use of the time He gives me. What I wish to recommend, although perhaps recommend is not the right word, is to set before you an obligation, or rather an image. I offer it so that we may make good use of the goodness and forbearance of God. Imagine, O man, that a river divides your life here from the life beyond. Imagine a river between this temporal life and eternity. To pass from temporality into eternity, to cross that river, you must go over a bridge made of two planks, two heavy boards, as we commonly call them. There are two boards. One is rotten and the other is sound. What will you do now? How will you cross? As our people wisely say, and they are not mistaken, a person stays watchful and ready at every moment. He has already bought his ticket and keeps it in his pocket. Some people have bought their ticket but left it at home. No, the Christian keeps it in his pocket. He knows neither the moment nor the hour when the undertaker will be waiting for him. He does not know, and clever talk is of no use here. Entire communities perish, whole families are wiped out, whole groups of friends are destroyed and lost within seconds, within a fraction of a second. Indeed, today there are many modern ways for death to take us. Along with our civilization, we have also produced a corresponding measure of destruction and corruption. So I ask, which of the two planks should a person step on? If you step on the sound plank, know that you will come through safely and reach the other side. But if you step on the rotten one, you know what will happen. And even if you try to keep shifting, one foot here and the other there, you will fall. Yet the choice depends on me. God has spoken. He has placed a red light on one side and a green light on the other. Every person's conscience speaks to him. God's written law speaks to him and teaches him which way to follow. Here we have a highway code, together with its penalties. It is the same in the spiritual life. Anyone who chooses to disregard the highway code here and follow it in his own way will not reach home, will not reach work, and will not return. He will be found either in the emergency room or in pieces at the morgue. How much more serious, then, is the other road? But because God is forbearing and does not give His answer immediately, people imagine that somehow they will escape. No one will escape, and everyone must keep this in mind. Satan always leads a person to step on the rotten plank. How many people have considered themselves fortunate because they committed adultery? And then others went looking for them and found them in the very bed of adultery. On another point, I wanted to respond by saying the following. You know that some of us passed from 1977 into 1978 while remaining exactly as we were before. We must examine ourselves. If in 1978 we are still as we were in 1977, then we must change now that we have been given the opportunity. And we must take heed. You know that we grieve Christ today by the way we live, because He is grieved when He sees us following the paths of the flesh, the world, the ego, self-interest, and Satan. This grief, this very grief, will be turned into wrath, and woe to the person who falls into the hands of the living God. Woe to that person! How long will he bear with us? How long shall I endure you? Many people do not know what Christ has done for them. They do not know because they do not study, they are not interested, and they do not want to learn very much. For then their lawless way of life would be exposed, and they would be called to abandon a road they enjoy. Sadly, many people are like the creature in the old fable, which tells how a lion once prepared a banquet for all the animals. It was a sumptuous banquet, with every delicacy imaginable. Among the animals was a pig, a swine. Though the feast was enough to make one's mouth water, as the saying goes, the pig kept searching and searching. "Please come and eat," they told him. "Acorns," he said. "Are there any acorns anywhere?" It was acorns he wanted. Many people are just like that. They care only for acorns. That is their food. They have no interest in what God has prepared, what eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor has entered into the heart of man, the things which God has prepared for those who love Him. A person ought to change, if only from shame and a sense of honor. In response to all that Christ has done for mankind, in the Old Testament, God makes an appeal and says, "Israel, Israel, why should you perish? Return to me." People make such things, sometimes quite serious things, even though it is not their profession, and they love what they make and feel deeply attached to it. So when he had perfected it, he fitted it with a little sail, went down to the shore near his home, and set it afloat. At some point the string broke, and the little boat drifted away from him, out into the night, and he lost it. He wept bitterly, sobbing and beating his breast. His little boat was gone. In any case, he returned home, where they comforted him. "You will make another one," and so on. A few days later, the story goes, he was passing through the marketplace when, to his astonishment, he saw that very boat in a shop window. Overjoyed, he went in, tucked it under his arm, and said, "Ah, now you are twice mine, once because I made you and once because I bought you." This is Christ. He is the one who made us, and he is the one who redeemed us with his blood. But who believes this? This is Christ, who takes it to heart, who has any sense of gratitude and honor within him. Who dares even to turn on the tap and drink water? Where did you get that water, my friend? Who dares to open the refrigerator and eat? Where did you get these things? Who dares to breathe, to open his eyes and see? Who made all these things? Was it I or you or your mother-in-law or anyone else? Who made them? Happy New Year! Do you know how those years were spent? How were they spent? Ask Christ to tell me how they were spent. How were they spent? And that is not all. Some people had a good time. They ate, drank, celebrated, indulged the flesh, and so forth. But there are other things behind all this. At the very same time, while some members of the family were rejoicing, others in that family were grieving. And Christ is not mine alone. He is yours as well. There are many things I cannot relate to you, things I know from experience within the society in which I live. I want to mention and emphasize just one thing that greatly provokes God, the respect children owe their parents. This is something God will never overlook. These homes for the elderly, for the most part, with certain exceptions, are a stain upon Christianity. They ought not to exist, and they will stand as witnesses against all those who spent these days enjoying themselves, whether at home or on a cruise, while their elderly parents were left somewhere else, cast aside in some rented room, far from their daughter, far from their daughter-in-law, far from their son, far from their grandchild. And you know, however many golden spoons you may give an elderly man to eat and drink with, they can never replace the tenderness of embracing his little grandchild. Such things cannot be replaced, whatever material things you may offer your father, your mother, your benefactor, or anyone upon whom you depend materially, spiritually, or even for your very life. You cannot set matters right or heal that wound as effectively as by simply showing affection to that elderly man or woman, or by eating together with them on the day of Pascha, however poor their table might be. But God is just, and as the people say, as each person makes his bed, so shall he lie in it. You know, our children today in the cities live inside these golden prisons, for apartments are golden prisons. For the most part, they have only indoor toys. They cannot even go out onto the balcony, and you see them taking up 1,001 activities inside, trying to expend their energy and fill their time. The story is told of a little boy who had toys like these and was building various rooms. His mother came over and saw the little boy there, building what looked like an apartment. "Well, little Nikos," she said, "what are you building there?" "This, Mama, is a room. And what will you do with this room?" "This is the room where I will live one day with my wife and my children," and so on. The little boy was dreaming, as children often do while playing with such toys. Next to it, he had built a kitchen. "And what is this, little Nikos? Is this where you will cook?" "No, Mama. This is where I will put you and Papa." "Little Nikos, you will put Papa and me in the kitchen. Is that not all right, Mama?" "But little Nikos, Mama, where do you keep Grandpa and Grandma? Do you not keep them in the kitchen? As you make your bed, O man, so shall you lie in it. God is just, and not merely just. The human mind cannot comprehend how exact and perfect the justice of God is. As you think and act, so you will be judged for the hardness you showed when you took another woman's husband or another man's wife, when you committed an injustice against that household, or dealt unjustly with that money. Where can you hide? God is just. Hurry to repent and return. Do it while there is still time. And see to it that you put your wrongdoings right as quickly as you can. Do not let God's justice overtake you. For if God's justice overtakes you, nothing can save you. Today, of course, there is still a measure of respite. But once a person passes from this life, he will stand face to face with God's justice, and then nothing can move it to mercy. Now, those listening to what I am saying at this moment may have nothing to do with any of this. Some may be living quietly in their own little world, yet bearing tribulations. They may have passed through dark days, some in mourning, some in poverty, and others amid all kinds of family or material troubles or whatever else it may be. There is also this group of people, and they too have entered the new year. Naturally, they too are waiting for something, and Satan often comes and says to them, "Where is your God? Why do you pretend to be a Christian? What good have your candles and incense done you? What good have the churches and all the rest done you? Can you not see the state you're in? Can you not see that your protector has been taken from you? Can you not see that you have lost your fine young man? Or what has happened to your daughter? Where is your family now? Where is it? Look at the joy everyone else has. Every other home is open and full of life, while yours is shut up." And he says other things like these. This is another group of people who ought to have reflected deeply on the meaning of these days. Unfortunately, my beloved, we have learned always to look outward, and so we often bring sorrow upon ourselves when there is no need to do so. For example, Paul says, "And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content." Yet you see anxiety and distress everywhere. You see people running after things they cannot attain and do not even need. Most people are clothed inwardly in black, not because they lack necessities, but because they lack things that are superfluous. They want to impress the surroundings in which God has placed them, because someone else has risen higher, or possesses more, and so on. This is satanic. It creates mourning and anxiety in your soul. You lose your sleep, your health, and much else besides. All of this is satanic. A painter once took up this theme. He painted a picture filled with greenery, so beautiful that it was a joy to behold. Through the middle of all this greenery, he placed a wooden fence dividing one half from the other. On one side he painted a white horse, and on the other a red horse. Each horse had before it the same amount of greenery as the other, equal both in quality and quantity, and each had the same stature and the same needs. And what strange thing did he show them doing? One stretched its neck over the fence to eat the grass on the other side, while the other stretched its neck across to eat from this side. Neither one ate what was in front of it. That is how most people are. They do not look at their own wife, but at their neighbor's. They do not look at their own husband, but at someone else's. They do not value their own sister or brother, but look to someone else's. They do not look at the money they have, but at what belongs to another. There is something personal here as well, though I ought not to tell you. Yet, speaking as a fool, as Paul says, I will tell you. Once I had a serious problem troubling me, and I sought help from above, and there appeared Saint Demetrios on his red horse. He said, I am guarding you. He guards me, and he guards every one of us. Do we believe it? And if someone is guarding you, that means you must remain where he has placed you. Stay there, and I will find you and tell you what to do. Have you forgotten what we heard the other day? Take the child, he said, and go to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you, I am watching over you. This is what matters, yet you listen to newspapers, radio, and TV, wondering when something will happen, what is going on behind the scenes, and how this or that will turn out. Stay there, and I will watch over you. Behold, we have the proof. Yet people go about mourning, suffering, tormented, and sorrowful, when they ought to rejoice. There are many such people. Know then that God is like an embroiderer. He has a canvas called your soul, and he is fashioning you, embroidering upon your soul. There was once a woman who embroidered, and embroidered very well. She had golden hands, yet inwardly she carried her own torment. Things were not going well for her. She was suffering from illness and other troubles. Someone nearby heard her and understood that her soul was filled with darkness, not only outwardly, but inwardly as well. He said to her, "That is beautiful. May I see it?" "Of course," she replied. He took it, but he held it from the wrong side. He was not looking at the front of the embroidery, but at the back. "That is strange," he said. "I had heard that you embroidered beautifully, that you had gifted hands. But now, looking at this..." "Ah, forgive me," she said. "You are holding it the wrong way around. You are looking at the back, and that is why it does not seem beautiful to you." "Yes," he replied. "I am looking at it exactly as you look at God. You look at God from the wrong side. You do not see that he is embroidering your soul properly, seeking to make it flawless, without a misplaced stitch, a crooked stitch, or a knot." "You do not see this," he told her. That was the lesson he wished to teach her. God is an artist. He has his chisel, and with it he works upon the unhewn stone of our soul. O man, no matter how many polite expressions and social graces you have learned, no matter how often you say thank you and forgive me, no matter how many books on good manners you have read, or how much worldly wisdom you possess, you must understand that you are still a piece of rough gravel. Do you know what gravel is? It is broken stone, rubble cast onto the road, over which a road roller weighing who knows how many tons must pass before anyone can walk upon it. That is what your soul is like within, unless Christ works upon it. The human soul must become like the smooth pebbles below, upon which you can go and sit. They too were once jagged stones, but for ages the waves dashed them against the rock, wearing away the sharp edges that caused trouble both to themselves and to others. And so they became gentle and useful. This is why a person must be attentive, must learn, and must accept God's discipline after all. If we are honest, Christ is not responsible for even one of the 100 sighs we utter, or the torrents of tears we shed. They come from our own ego and from the wrong turns we have taken in life without asking Christ. We have created the troubles in our homes and within ourselves with our own hands. The Lord has not intervened to cause them at all. The Lord does send temptations, as he did to Paul, but Paul was not creating temptations for himself. That is why the Lord sent him one. We create our own temptations. We ourselves threw our homes wide open and brought that devil's box. The TV inside, when you rise and leave home to meet this person or that person on the street, Have you ever asked God? Before going out, have you prayed with the awareness that whole regiments of demons are waiting for you so that you may be able to withstand them? Have you ever asked for God's strength to bear the burden of the day, the tribulation and pressure that come from an evil world, a bad neighbor, a dishonest business partner, a harmful companion, an evil spectacle, and everything you will see and hear? Have you ever asked for the strength you need to endure? Have you taught your child not to go out concerned only with what to put in his mouth or whether he might lose weight? Have you armed your child through prayer? Have you taught him how to go out fortified against the world? As I have said, the camel has a lesson for us. Every evening, the camel kneels so that we may remove the day's load from its back. A man also returns home weary each day. Those whose occupations bring them into the daily friction of life know this well. They know what demons they must contend with. In the evening, they return exhausted both physically and spiritually, especially spiritually. The bodily weariness troubles them less than the weariness of the soul. If only they knew how to unload their burden, kneeling before Christ and saying, "Lord, take away the evil of this day." Then in the morning they should kneel once more like the camel and take up not the burden that the day will bring, but the blessing. They should pray again and receive God's blessing so that they may bear the day's burden. But most of us barely pray at night, if at all, and we do not kneel in the morning. Consequently, our hump is worse than the camel's, and we suffer and torment ourselves. Let each person then examine which category he belongs to, what he could have understood, what he could have done, and what he could have set right in all these matters. For if God keeps adding to what he gives, but a person does not make good use of it, then that person will reap the consequences of his actions, as we say. In the few minutes remaining, I would also like to mention something else, which as Christians we shall hear about in the church next Sunday. It is the matter of ingratitude. On Sunday, the church presents to us the healing of the 10 lepers. There the Lord says, "Were not 10 cleansed? Where, then, are the 9? What ingratitude! Who, whether as an individual, as a family, or as part of a gathering, paused on New Year's Eve to turn toward Christ and say, 'My Christ, I thank you for everything you allowed to come upon me this year.' Unfortunately, we attributed everything to our own abilities. Everything. The day before yesterday, around noon, I was getting off the bus at the academy. A young woman at the kiosk was calling her mother. I saw her jumping for joy and shouting, 'Mom, I came first!' The kiosk owner thought she was possessed or out of her mind. Apparently, she had succeeded in some examination or competition, and she was making quite a scene. I wonder whether she said, 'With God's help, Mom, I passed.' Perhaps they attributed it to her intelligence or to her mother's connections. Perhaps the girl was simply clever. I do not know what it was, honestly. You know, if God, the engineer, were to take a little screwdriver and turn just one screw, you would see that those abilities belong neither to her nor to her mother. They belong to someone else, to whom she ought to say, 'Thank you, my God.' Would she do that? There will certainly be a party, because she came first, and all the rest. There will be celebrations, meetings, plans, and so on. But no word of thanks. I hope she did give thanks. I hope her mother said, 'Come now, my child, go and light a candle to the Most Holy Theotokos. Go and thank God.' Perhaps she did. Perhaps I am being excessive. But I have suffered greatly from such things, and I know that they are not insignificant. He gives water to the earth so that we may have water to drink. Who thanks God? Who? Who gives any thought to these things when he could send even more water and bury us within seconds? Yet that thank you is missing. Unfortunately, many of us do not thank God. We do not look inwardly. We look only at outward things. We do not see the grandeur. That is how we are. Once there was a man who managed to obtain a telescope, and he used it to behold the grandeur of the universe. Every night he went outside, looked through it, and was left speechless by what he saw. Then one evening he told his wife that she too could look through the telescope. So that night she went upstairs to have a look for herself. She returned after some time, and what do you think she said? 'Did you see? Did you see, my goodness? It brings everything so close, as though it were happening right before your eyes. I saw everything that was going on in the neighborhood. She had turned the telescope around and was looking into the neighbor's kitchen. She watched how they cooked, what they said, and everything else they were doing. Do you understand? That is how most people are. How could they marvel, give thanks, or acknowledge God's gifts? Nothing. The world lacks a noble sense of gratitude. Since I'm speaking about this, let me tell you another beautiful story I once read. You know, the Chinese have a strong sense of gratitude. Once some missionaries passed through and healed a woman. They had some medicine or something of that sort, and her illness was cured. What can I do for you now? She asked. Nothing, they replied. This is from God. Who is this God? She asked. He is our God, the God whom we proclaim. He has given these things. Then there is nothing I can do. But I must do something for you, she insisted. What could you do? They asked. I must do something. I have found it. I know what I will do. What will you do? I will pray to God that when I die, I may become a little donkey. They believed in reincarnation. Then I can carry you, so that you will not have to travel on foot. I will carry you from one place to another. Do you understand? As for us, even when another person, let alone God, does a thousand things for us, if he fails to do one thing, we forget all the other thousand. The thanklessness and ingratitude we show toward God will be repaid very severely, both in this world and in the next. Forgive me for the manner and the method in which I have spoken. Still, these things come from what I see, hear, and read. They are part of my life, and a person can be edified by them if he wishes. I have a series of thoughts and a particular aim in mind. If I am granted the opportunity, and if God permits, I hope to give another talk along these same lines, because the Christian faces many further responsibilities, even though by the blessing of God he has entered the new year. Thank you.